How about a smoothie?
So it's pineapple, blueberry, a little bit of spinach, some apple juice, coconut water, and water.
No added sugar today. I'm Gina Kaufman, and it's a Friday food show on KCUR's Central Standard. We're checking out one of those cafes popping up around town where they don't serve a specific style of cuisine, like barbecue or sushi or French. Instead, the food is simply branded healthy. On today's show, we'll look at what healthy means and tastes like, starting with a visit to a spot on the plaza. It looks like a cross between a living room and a clothing boutique, but it's neither one. KCUR's Sylvia Maria Gross went by to talk to the owner, whose health issues led her to change her diet and her career.
The first time I saw Tea Loft on the plaza, I saw the words Health Cafe on a gray awning. And I was like, is this a doctor's office? A nail salon? Coffee shop? When you walk in, the corner restaurant is all gray lines and hip, boxy decor. A giant porch swing is by the front counter.
I wanted it to feel like you're coming to your best friend's house, so I want us to feel like we're cooking for our friends.
This is just one of Jill Mitten's four restaurants in the KC area, including one in Lawrence. Just 7 years ago, Jill knew nothing about health food or restaurants.
I was an IT consultant, worked all the time, traveled all the time, had two little kids, was feeling extremely exhausted, and kept thinking in the back of my mind, something's not right.
Turned out Jill had celiac disease, an autoimmune disorder which is triggered by eating gluten, which is in wheat, barley, rye, and malt. So she had to learn how to cook and eat differently.
I'd always loved tea. I mean, I'd loved it even through high school. I think it always calmed my digestive system.
Tea Loft started with tea and juices and some healthy snacks. Jill developed a line that she started selling at the Overland Park Farmers Market. 2 years later, she quit her job, and she and her husband were opening a restaurant.
We've been blowing and going ever since, and it's been a wild and crazy ride. Eggs scrambled, cooked with chicken, a variety of veggies, with sweet potatoes, red peppers, and then we used some buffalo sauce to give it a little fun kick.
Tea Loft is what's called in the food industry fast casual. They quickly make the bowl you order in a kitchen right behind the counter. There's lots of vegetables, fruit, nuts, and quinoa, and of course, no gluten in anything.
You know, what I and what I've tried to teach our kids as we've grown up is to really pay attention to how you feel, and I think that is the biggest motivator to what you choose to eat.
Speaking of people choosing to eat at Tea Loft, first baseman Eric Hosmer had a penchant for the food there, so now Jill's catering for the Royals and visiting teams on game days. Yep, that's probably why they're professional baseball players and you're in the stands eating hot dogs and french fries. Anyhow, with the growing popularity of her kind of restaurant, Jill Mitten does not think healthy food is just a fad.
I mean, food, it evolves, and I love the health movement. I think it's here to stay. I don't think people are going back to the way fast food was. I think once you start to eat this way, it's really hard to go back. And the consumer's becoming really educated, which is cool.
Sylvia Maria Gross brought us that story from Tea Loft on the plaza. We'll be hearing more on the healthy restaurant trend later in the show when our food critics arrive. But first, the whole concept of what's healthy is in a constant state of flux. Remember the 90s when people ate bagels to lose weight because they were fat-free? And then we switched to no carbs, just meat, because suddenly fat was fine and carbohydrates were the culprit. Well, another maligned ingredient is salt. For decades, people have been saying that salt is bad for you. But in a new book, a local scientist says that's just not the case. James DeNicolantonio is a cardiovascular research scientist at St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute, and his book is The Salt Fix. Hi, James.
How's it going, Gina?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
You write that humans are essentially salty, and you have this whole passage that's almost poetic about how salt in the ocean, like the salt content in the ocean, is the same as the salt content in human blood. What is the role of salt in our bodies?
Yeah, so basically, the concentration of salt compared to other minerals in our blood is the exact same as the ancient ocean. So we carry that saltiness with us. And so we need to maintain salt. And if we lose salt, we can actually have some serious issues. And the benefits of salt are very far-reaching. And what my book explains, The Salt Fix, is that we really just assumed salt was bad for us without any proof. And really, the book is there to expose that story and tell people why they may need more salt in their lives.
So when you talk about benefits of salt, what are you What are they?
Yeah, so, I mean, well, first of all, we need to understand that how much salt we're losing in a day. So if we just drink 4 cups of coffee, we can lose an entire teaspoon of salt in 4 hours out the urine, and yet we're told not to consume more than that. So you can start seeing that most Americans consume about 4 cups of coffee every day. And so you need to add that salt back, or else you can slowly become depleted. And so some of the side effects of low salt include muscle cramping, muscle spasms, dizziness upon standing too quickly, and an increase in heart rate. And some people think that they're not getting enough water, but really they're just not getting enough salt.
Does that mean, though, that consuming endless amounts of table salt is actually a good idea?
So what's great about salt is that it's an essential nutrient, so our body regulates it just like water. So if we get too much, the salt taste receptors on our tongue actually flip and tell us when we've had too much. Unlike sugar, when you consume more sugar, the more you crave and the more you want of it.
So where did we get the idea that salt is bad for us?
Well, that was the first question I wanted to answer when I was researching my new book, The Salt Fix. Where do we get this idea? And it all stems back from the 1977 dietary goals. We were told to eat a high-carb diet, cut out saturated fat, cut out total fat, cut out cholesterol, sugar, and salt. And it was only based on a few expert opinions, and they actually misrepresented what those experts were trying to say. So these two experts, George Menneely and Harold Bartleby, wrote a paper and they said only in people who don't eat enough potassium and only in people who are genetically susceptible to salt's blood pressure raising effect should they possibly reduce salt intake. But unfortunately, everyone in America was told in 1977 to cut their salt intake, and that carried over to the dietary guidelines, and that's been carrying over every 5 years with those updates.
So, you know, this is interesting to me in the sense that right now there are these differing attitudes out there towards science and really strong attitudes towards science. You know, people seem to have on one side this really deep distrust of the scientific establishment to the point that they'll even say they don't believe in science, or else they'll treat the latest study and the way that's been communicated to them through various filters as the final word on any subject. So, I mean, as a scientist yourself, presuming you have a great deal of faith in the scientific process, how do you understand the misinformation about salt? I mean, is there a larger lesson here?
Yeah, so we should stick with the facts and we should avoid people's opinions. And that's what happened with salt. We just automatically assumed it was bad for us when a few experts said that it was bad for us back in 1977. We didn't even have systematic reviews of studies on salt and blood pressure until 15 years after we had already demonized it. And what the studies actually show is that people who consume the lowest amounts of salt are at the highest risk of cardiovascular events and mortality. And that makes sense because we lose salt in sweat. And we lose salt with caffeine, and medications cause salt loss. And all these disease states prevent us from absorbing salt well. So we should listen to our own bodies because they're driving us to consume the optimal amounts of salt and water. Just like no one would ever restrict their water intake because someone said, well, you should only drink one cup of water because it can lower your blood pressure a little bit. That's basically what's happening with salt, is they're telling you to consciously go against what your body's own cravings are for it. And we know that guidelines aren't smarter than our own bodies.
Don't we, though, have cravings that are kind of leading us astray, just in the sense that our lifestyle today doesn't demand maybe as much fat as our ancestors might have needed when they were, you know, hunting and gathering instead of sitting in cubicles?
Sure. Salt's different, though. Salt is an essential nutrient. Fat is not, the saturated fat, not an essential nutrient. Sugar is not an essential nutrient. And because salt is an essential nutrient and your body controls how much salt is in it, it drives you to consume the optimal amount. And we know this from animals that will go to a salt lick when they're depleted of salt. The body has an automatic system to control salt intake. The cravings are not leading you to overconsumption, whereas cravings for, let's say, saturated fat or sugar, those aren't essential and the body doesn't control their intake. And so, yes, those cravings you probably want to avoid. But when it comes to salt, which controls how much blood volume you have and literally controls if you are going to survive or not, that is something you should listen to.
Talk to me about your research.
Yeah, so the book, The Salt Fix, has over 500 references. I spent over 2 years researching specifically for the book, but I've been publishing about salt and nutrition for years now. And so I published over a couple hundred papers in the medical literature, and my research really reveals all the harms that have been ignored by the advocates of the low salt advice. So we focused on blood pressure. We never focused on the other harmful effects. So when we restrict our salt intake, the research shows that it increases our heart rate. It stiffens the arteries. It increases a fat-storing hormone called insulin, so we might store more fat while on low-salt diets. And of course, salt brings iodine, and that's important for thyroid function and our metabolism. So we've just kind of focused on blood pressure and swept all the other harmful effects of cutting salt out of our diets under the rug. And my book reveals all those harmful effects when we cut our salt intake.
Your previous book was about sugar, which you see as the real demon in our diets. Can you sort of put this research on salt in the context of, the larger research you've done on what we do and don't need as humans?
Yeah, so that's exactly right. So refined sugar is not an essential nutrient, whereas salt is. And so because of that, and because sugar has been refined to a point just like a substance of abuse, it's taken from a plant, it's boiled down, it's purified into this white potent crystal. It's almost like a chemical-like substance now that has addictive-like properties. But that white crystal has been probably doing all the damage to your kidneys, your high blood pressure, and cardiovascular events, and yet we've blamed it on salt inappropriately. So my book reveals that we've blamed the wrong white crystal, and that is sugar is really the white crystal we should be avoiding.
Like, is a little bit okay?
Yeah, we can in my book, The Salt Fix, I kind of give, we shouldn't really be consuming more than 30 grams of added sugars per day, but the average American is probably consuming around 100 grams, or like three times what my recommended intake is in my book. So it is an issue, especially in children who are consuming potentially twice that amount.
We talked to you about that book, your book on sugar, a while back, and I was kind of devastated by your stance on juice. You said that juice has, I hope I'm remembering this right, all the sugar from fruit, but without the fiber that actually eating the whole fruit would provide, and that leaves your body craving the part of the fruit that got left behind. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So basically what happens when you take a fruit, there's all this fiber and all this water and vitamins and minerals in the fruit. And when you actually just juice it, you're losing the fiber, and that fiber reduces the absorption of the sugar and it slows down the absorption of the sugar. So you get less of a blood sugar spike, which means you have a less chance of actually going low blood sugar, which can lead to a continuous cycle of cravings for sugar. And that's why juice is pretty much soda without the buzz.
I feel totally betrayed by this. I mean, I can handle the idea that a piece of candy isn't a good idea, but fresh juice, you're killing me.
It's honestly so revealing, but people do tell me all the time, when I cut out the juice, my blood sugar control dramatically improved, and I wasn't in this perpetual cycle of blood sugar spike and then low blood sugar.
So, but when you see, like, they're part of the health food trend right now is, like, the fresh juice place, you know what I mean? And I have to tell you, you shared this information with me more than a year ago, and it has not changed me one bit. I still love fresh juice, and I still feel really healthy when I drink it.
Sure. So there's some people that if they're athletic and they're not insulin resistant and they're fit and healthy, it might not be too bad, especially if you're only consuming maybe one cup a day. But it's the people that are consuming juice, breakfast, lunch, and dinner that are going to be the most susceptible to those harmful effects.
So, I mean, taking in all of this information that we thought salt was bad for us, and it turns out that we need it. And on the other hand, you know, we thought having a bunch of fresh juice would be really good for us, and that maybe some is fine, but like tons of it is not. So this is world changing for some people. And if you are going to leave us with one piece of advice in terms of just how we understand what healthy even is and how our ideas about that change and evolve, even scientifically change and evolve, what would your advice be?
Really simple. the key to health is eat real food and salt to taste.
That's it?
That's it. It's simple as that. So I use salt to basically eat bitter greens, bitter nuts, bitter seeds, and it's your gateway to eating healthy, and it's your gateway to exercising more.
James DeNicolantonio, author of The Salt Fix, thanks so much.
Thanks, Gina.
James is a cardiovascular research scientist and doctor of pharmacy at St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute. When we return, our search for the healthiest foods in Kansas City begins. Is there an item on a local menu that makes you feel nourished? Or have you tried something awful in the name of health that you want to help the rest of us avoid? 816-235-2888. We're back. It's a food show on KCUR Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're interrogating the concept of healthy food. Our critics are here, and we want your healthy food reviews at 816-235-2888. What have you tried? And more importantly, how did it taste? 816-235-2888. Let's quickly establish what exactly it is we're talking about. There's a new type of cafe popping up around town that caters to health trends. So raw food, gluten-free food, fresh juices and smoothies, fresh organic produce, kale and everything. Jenna Teleska is with us to tell us about the trend nationally. She's the editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News. Hi, Jenna.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great.
Where and when did this healthy genre of restaurants begin?
Well, I mean, it's been ongoing for several years. I'd say it's the biggest food trend right now. The origin was in fine dining, from the New American Cuisine wave. Alice Waters is a pioneer of the local produce and vegetables, and then it's applied to all different types of restaurants now, and all restaurants in different ways.
Is there a lot of investment in the concept right now, just financially?
Definitely. So every type of concept is probably investing in this idea of healthy food. Now, healthy food doesn't have one definition or interpretation. It's really about what diners feel good about eating, and they still want it to taste good. They want this feeling of wholesomeness. But it's not always about nutrition or calories. It, you know, like such as substituting in sugar for high fructose corn syrup. That's not something that necessarily really impacts your health, but people feel good about it, and removing preservatives. So where we see the investment on the large restaurant chains is removing artificial ingredients, taking out artificial colors and sweeteners. McDonald's, last year, they removed artificial ingredients and moved to antibiotic-free chicken in their chicken nuggets, and they saw a 10% boost in sales. So that's a big investment for an operator that sells a huge amount of chicken nuggets. Same thing with their ice cream. They sell 68 million ice cream cones a year, and this year they quietly removed artificial flavors, colors, and preservatives from their soft serve ice cream without even doing a big marketing push around it.
Well, so when restaurants, whether they're big chains and fast food restaurants or these sort of niche places that are directly appealing to ideas about what's healthy, when they make mm-hmm. nutritional claims or claims about what is healthy and what isn't, do those have to be substantiated?
I mean, the word healthy is not something like organic where you need to have a certification. So it really depends on the definition of the consumer. So it's not something that's hard and fast. Like the word natural doesn't have an FDA-approved like definition.
Do you have ideas about why this is such a popular trend right now? I mean, you said this is the biggest trend in food right now.
I think people want to feel good about what they eat. And they want to know it about what they eat, and so removing things like artificial preservatives, like those words sound scientific. They want to get back down to the basics of what food is. So in the smaller brands that are coming up, we're seeing a lot of investment in like fruits and vegetables. Even if like vegan places, like this place by Chloe, they're vegan, but there are a very small amount of vegans, and this chain is still doing well. And it's because people want to really eat better, and they want to feel better, and they want to eat things that taste good. And places like By Chloe are making it taste good for people that are carnivores too.
What do you think? I mean, I've considered that maybe there are just so many special dietary concerns individuals might have, like that they're obligated to be gluten-free, or that just the frequency with which we eat out, like we have to care about health more now that eating in restaurants isn't quite the special treat it used to be.
That's true. Yeah, and I think that's why you see the rise in these fast casual restaurants. Those are the players that are a little more expensive than quick service or what you call fast food players, and they often serve alcohol. So you'll see like the poke bowl trend with the Hawaiian dish with the raw tuna and over rice with chili flakes and sesame seeds, and you'll see the Mediterranean food trend. Places like Zoe's Kitchen, based in Texas, they expanded quite rapidly, and they rely on fats like olive oil that people feel good about. So, yeah, I think that's a big part of it, that people are eating out more, and even they're eating out more when they're going to the supermarket and they're buying things that are already prepared and ready to eat for dinner.
Jenna Telesca, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now let's welcome our critics. Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, thanks for being here.
Good morning.
And Lisa Murphy is a mindfulness expert and blogger. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning, Gina.
So you both have a few things you want on the table before you make your recommendations. Jenny, I'll start with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, just in terms of healthy eating, I mean, it's really, really hard in this day and age in a restaurant setting to get something truly healthy unless you're eating a salad with no salad dressing. I mean, that's truly kind of where we're at. And I don't know if that's necessarily a function of the Midwest. I feel like that's kind of something that fundamentally is everywhere. And so we're trying really hard today to certainly recommend a few salads, but, you know, get beyond the salad bowl and really talk about some things that are healthy-ish for you and not necessarily the most healthy.
Lisa, what about you? What is it that you want to kind of lay out there as far as, I don't know, maybe myths or assumptions about what we think of as healthy?
Like Jenna said, I believe that there are so many different personal definitions of what healthy is, and I feel that every individual needs to make their own choice and have their own personal philosophy. And I really rely on restaurants that serve quality ingredients, someplace where I know is going to serve local, organic, wherever possible. And then I don't feel so bad about having the salad with the dressing, for example.
So then your definition, I mean, you aren't looking at all of the complexities of what healthy may or may not mean. You're really focused specifically on quality ingredients.
Personally, yes. Yeah. And I choose to eat a pescatarian diet, so I don't eat meat. So that's just one way I draw the line. But I think every individual needs to do that for themselves.
All right. But so we're going to get your recommendations, and we're going to focus not on health claims and assessing those with each and every dish. We're understanding that everyone's coming to this with their own definition of healthy. We're really evaluating, like, do these things taste good? Do we like them? Would you recommend that people eat it if they want to be satisfied at a restaurant? But Bethany Fraser is with us. She's a licensed dietitian who's here to help us out in the event that someone does start making health claims that we can't confirm or deny. Hi, Bethany.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Anything you want to respond to so far?
I think that just having those general recommendations on what healthy is and what it isn't, and especially when you're eating out, it doesn't have to be just the calorie content. I think that's been our traditional definition of healthy, is what's the calorie content, and that's not always the case. Sometimes we can still really enjoy our food, and it might have a few more calories than we'd like or a few more fat grams than we like, but we can still have a really good, satisfying meal with those things involved.
Right. And the assumption there is kind of that we're all trying to lose weight, which not everyone really should be trying to lose weight.
Right. Yeah, that's where we've come at it in a lot of even the trends in restaurants, as they've come at it. We're like, oh, let's just put our calorie content on our menus or right in front where people can see that. And I think you're right. They're assuming that we all want to lose weight, but that's not the healthy definition for everyone. We have to consider the whole package of the food that's coming in and our dietary patterns. So what do we do on a day-to-day basis, not just when we eat out?
Okay, well, give us a call at 816-235-2888 with your reviews of healthy foods. And we're going to put healthy in quotation marks. You know, the thing that you've gone out and eaten that has either been marketed as healthy or that you have felt good about eating that has felt nourishing to you, What did you think? How did it taste? Do you recommend it? 816-235-2888. Jenny, start us off. You've got a variety of burgers, which might surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, a veggie burger, obviously, if you're craving a burger, there's all kinds of ways you can do that. There's a portobello mushroom burger, typically on a lot of menus around town. I personally am recommending the veggie burger at Howard's Grocery and Cafe and Catering. You know, he's known for his regular cheeseburger as just being an amazing feat, which it certainly is. But to get a veggie burger right, to get the texture right, to get something that caramelizes like a burger and holds together and doesn't crumble apart and isn't dry is really tough to do. And Craig has spent actually a lot of time in research. Talk to him sometime if you're interested. He'll tell you all of his failed attempts to make the best veggie burger. But his actually has a mixture of French green lentils, red beans, rehydrated porcini mushrooms, brown rice, quinoa, carrots, garlic, nutritional yeast, and vegan Worcestershire sauce. And it's flavorful and it holds together and it doesn't eat like a bean burrito. You know, so many veggie burgers tend to rely so heavily on beans. And it's got
and
a nice brioche
bun.
Can
be mushy.
Bun. Yes, I agree.
That's a great downfall of most, but not all, veggie burgers.
Or they're the terrible frozen burger that's just mass marketed and they just pass it off as their veggie burger. So they don't even make one in-house. So his is made in-house. And if you're looking for a good veggie burger and you're just wanting to satisfy it, that's a great thing. One more thing I'll quickly mention is the blended burger campaign that James Beard Foundation is basically doing right now. And they're encouraging chefs across the country to make burgers that are at least 25% cultivated mushrooms, and then the rest is a ground meat of your choice. And
the idea there being that you're just sort of reducing the amount of meat in each burger.
That's right. Looking, you know, at the health impact of just that simple switch or that simple substitution, as well as teaching people that it still can taste delicious even though it's partly plant-based. And we have several restaurants in town that are participating in this contest. And the winning top five chefs across the country will actually win a trip to New York City to cook their burger at the James Beard House. But Stock Hill Grill, Blue Stem, Hank's Charcuterie in Lawrence, and Julep are a handful of the restaurants in town where you can go right now and try on their menu the blended burger. And then you can go online and vote for your favorite.
So have you tried any of them?
I have. I've tried three of them, actually. And the one that's not on here is Happy Gillis. Josh Eanes is also doing one at Happy Gillis. But yes, so I had probably my favorite of the three. I tried Blue Stem, Josh's burger from Happy Gillis and Stock Hill. And my favorite was probably the Stock Hill burger. His burger actually was quite a bit more mushroom. I think his was almost 50% mushroom. And I was really surprised at how moist and how the burger held together. Again, the same thing with the veggie burger. Like I worried that these burgers would just kind of fall apart. But with just that, you know, certain amount of, you know, 50% meat, in his case, it was ground steak, obviously, that they serve at Stock Hill. But delicious and creative toppings and a great brioche bun. It was very satisfying to eat. Very meaty. You know, if you think about mushrooms, umami, meat flavors, all of those seem to go together. So go
so
try it.
Stock Hill. Where is Stock Hill?
Stock Hill's just south of the plaza. Old Livestock Exchange building.
The other restaurants that are doing this are Happy Gillis, Blue Stem, Hank's Charcuterie, and Julep.
Right.
All right. Are there any... Now... You know, Lisa, you've said you're a pescatarian, but you also are extolling the virtues of Howard's Cafe's veggie burger.
You know, I love Howard's Cafe, and I completely agree with Jenny. I think it's one of the few veggie burgers that I actually enjoy. I'm not someone, I don't want a hamburger or a veggie burger to taste like a hamburger. Because
right.
I choose not to eat meat because I don't want to eat meat. So I don't want a burger that's meant to taste like meat. That would be kind of beside the point for
fake
me.
Fake food.
Yeah, exactly. So I love it that Howard's uses, again, this is part of my definition of healthy eating, whole foods to make his burger. Where I might disagree with Jenny is that I would substitute their beautiful side salad for the fries.
There you go.
And then your whole meal would be healthier, especially if you're going to eat the bun, which of course I want to eat the bun as well. So you get this beautiful veggie burger that I believe is fried. And instead of getting Craig's delicious fries, substitute their side salad that has beautiful seasonal vegetables, a little bit of queso fresco.
And salads are really good.
And you've got a really lovely meal.
So another trend in, I would say, this healthy food genre is quinoa, and quinoa moving outside of its, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people were introduced to quinoa as a side dish, and now the quinoa bowl, like the quinoa entree. You're recommending a quinoa entree at Westside Local.
It's a perennial favorite for me. I think they've had it on the menu, I'm not sure about since their inception,
dish.
But it is so good. Yeah. You get a really nice big serving of, I believe it's red quinoa even.
Mm-hmm.
And they add seasonal vegetables to it. So that's great, right? And I think often they have local veggies that they grow in the garden behind their restaurant. You can add a protein if you like. They've got grilled chicken or grilled salmon. And quinoa, and Bethany could probably chime in here, but quinoa is an ancient grain that's really high in protein. So if you're a vegetarian or even vegan and concerned about your protein content, you're going to get a nice serving of complex carbohydrate and veggie protein as well.
Bethany, right. Do talk to us about quinoa. And also, we've heard a little bit about mushrooms, and I'd like to hear about your take on those, too.
Yeah, so both traditionally have been used a lot in as a substitute for meats. And quinoa is one of the few complete proteins, so it is a complete substitute for meat. As far as the protein profile, the amino acid profile that we're looking at. So it is a really good substitute, and I'm glad that's become more popular. And I do have a lot of people that will come to me and they'll say, I don't like it, it tastes funny. And I usually tell them, go find the restaurant in your town that makes the best quinoa and have someone else prepare it for you. So you have a really good experience with it, and then you'll love it. If you try it once and you have someone that actually knows what they're doing, prepare it for you. I don't think it's hard to prepare, but I do feel like a lot of people try it, and that's,
you know,
the problem.
One of the things about quinoa, making it at home, I find if you rinse the grains first and then boil or cook them on your stove, it makes a huge difference in that kind of dirt flavor that a lot of people kind of find in quinoa. Yep. So I would recommend just rinsing it like you would rinse rice or anything else.
Yeah, it's not a beans. Cooking show, Gina. Sorry, but Jenny's totally right.
Please.
It's the bitter, I forget what it's called.
Saponin.
But the bitter saponin that you rinse. And I also boil mine.
Mm-hmm.
Quit trying to measure the water and everything. Just boil it, drain it like you would pasta. It's perfect every time.
You can toast it a little bit, too.
Toasted toasted quinoa is everywhere right now. That is a hot, hot way to do it. Mm-hmm. And it adds crunch.
Mushrooms, we've talked about that you can reduce the amount of meat in a burger by putting in a lot of mushrooms. But as far as, like, the active, positive health benefits of mushrooms, I don't know how healthy mushrooms mm-hmm. are.
Yeah, well, mushrooms, they, depending on where you get them from, but they can provide a lot of nutrients. Vitamin D is one of the ones that we know it's high in mushrooms. So that's a good way to get that vitamin D. Although it's summertime, we don't have as much trouble getting our vitamin D, but that's one of the ones that you can look for. And some of the other nutrients in it that are a little bit harder to find. And that just has to do with that plant base of where they're grown from. That's why some of the wild mushrooms are popular, because they have a little bit more of that unique nutrients from the soil.
Well, let's hear from some of our callers. We've got Aaron in Kansas City. Aaron, what do you want to recommend?
I like the tofu with black bean sauce at Blue Koi, and I add red pepper and broccoli to it and take out some of the mushroom because I'm not a big mushroom fan.
Despite the health benefits of mushrooms we just heard about?
Yes, I mean, not since the 80s when I was following the Grateful Dead, but...
Aaron, tofu, I mean, have you sampled tofu dishes all over town and this one stands out to you?
Yes, it actually, all over the country, it's the best tofu I've ever had is in this dish.
What makes it good?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. It just tastes delicious. And anyone that ever orders anything else at Blue Koi and tries mine, they're upset that they didn't get what I got, so...
So, well, thanks for that call, Aaron. Aaron's recommending a tofu and black bean sauce dish at Blue Koi. And it's interesting, tofu as a pretty popular health food, it's something that I think you either prepare well or you prepare badly. There's not a lot of in between. Any other tofu dish recommendations?
Oh, gosh. Jenny, help me. I'm drawing a blank here.
Yeah, I mean, you can find tofu. Like, Room 39 has tofu scrambled. I mean, they take scrambled eggs and put tofu in them.
Oh, sure. So. And the tofu scramble at Bluebird Cafe is really delicious. And I completely confess, since I'm not vegan, I add an egg to it. Mm-hmm. And they'll put a fried egg on the tofu scramble. It's delicious. One thing I will comment about tofu is back to the idea that it's really the quality of the ingredients that make our food healthy or not healthy, is that tofu absolutely, in my opinion, must be organic. Because if it's not, the soybeans are genetically modified and have often been treated with a lot of chemicals and pesticides. So, we need to seek out a restaurant that we know has quality ingredients. A lot of the restaurants in town, I know Bluebird does, serve the Central Soy Foods tofu. It's mm-hmm. a organic tofu maker out of Lawrence. And it's worth seeking out sprouted tofu as well.
What is that?
It's where the soybean has actually been sprouted before they then make it into the tofu. So tofu, again, it is a processed food, but if you're using a good quality soybean to make it, you're not getting harmful additives.
Let's talk to Clark in Kansas City. Clark, what are you recommending?
Hi. Well, here's the thing. I just wanted to comment on mushrooms for those of us who are of a senior citizen age. You know, the mature person, the mushrooms help the free radicals, so it reduces the aging process, and that's something that if people Google the benefit of mushrooms, they will find.
Well, we'll get some feedback on that from our dietitian, but before we do, is there a particular mushroom dish that you would like to guide us to as eaters in Kansas City?
Now, my wife makes a portobello mushroom, and she garnishes the mushroom with a Havarti cheese with red onions and tomatoes from the garden. And I will take the mushrooms and take them out on the grill, you know, to give a nice flavor, you know. And it will taste like meat. Some people are kind of surprised when, you know, you grill the mushroom. And as it kind of cooks down and you place it in the sandwich or Swiss cheese, you know, your preference.
Okay. Well, Clark, as much as that sounds great, and I don't want to speak for your wife, but I'm guessing that she's not prepared to serve us all lunch today. But Bethany, why don't you comment on
the free radicals
yes.
and the mushrooms?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so when we are all of us just normal lives going about we're creating free radicals, we see on all of our packaging, all of our labeling, the antioxidants, which is what combats those free radicals. So you just living and eating, breathing are creating free radicals, and you want to eat foods that are combating it with the antioxidants. And that's plentiful in all of our fruits and vegetables. So that's why we kind of steer people towards a plant-based diet, because it does help combat some of those, which does help whether you're 15 or you're 65, we have to, we can balance out a lot of those with the foods that we eat.
A plant-based diet, and yet, Lisa Murphy, you are recommending some sushi today.
I am. The Japanese diet is traditionally one that's been studied with some of the most amazing results. We probably all heard of the Okanagan people that have one of the longest population life expectancies in the world. And I think they attributed a lot to low intake of saturated fat, lots of grains and vegetables, and they eat a lot of seafood. And so if you're eating a clean diet, I believe that could include really good, clean, quality seafood. I'm a purist. I like sashimi and a little bit of seaweed salad, which, again, I know has probably some sugar and some artificial color in it. It doesn't stay that green. But seaweed also has amazing benefits, which is probably one of the secrets of the Japanese diet.
And when you talk about sashimi, that's where it's just the piece of fish over rice, no other ingredients.
You know what? Sashimi is just the fish.
Oh, just the fish.
Yeah, so it's pure, clean protein. Mm-hmm.
And why do you recommend Bob's Wasabi in particular?
I think that the quality of their seafood is amazing. The last time I was in there, they had a chunk of tuna sitting on the bar that I just could not believe the color of it. It was so absolutely beautiful. And I was there for about an hour and a half with a friend, and we thought, surely that must be for a couple of days' worth of dinners. And by the time we left, the whole chunk was completely gone.
Well, call us up with your favorite food that is quote-unquote healthy or healthy-ish, the food that makes you feel nourished and good and like you've done the best you can outside your own kitchen. 816-235-2888. Health claims aside, how does this stuff taste? That's what we want to know. I'm Gina Kaufman, KCUR Central Standard. We'll be right back. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we're talking about healthy food, or quote-unquote healthy food, or healthy-ish food. And I have to admit, we've been putting this show off for a long time, which I feel like is sort of a great metaphor. We've been meaning to do that healthy show, just like so many people have been meaning to go on that healthier diet. But our guests are food critic Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, and we've also got some special guests today, food and mindfulness blogger Lisa Murphy and Bethany Frazier, who's Alliance Dietitian, here to chime in when
anyone starts making health claims that the rest of us can neither confirm nor deny. Let's go to one of our listeners who's called us up at 816-235-2888, Tina and Miriam. Hi, Tina.
Hi.
What do you want to recommend?
Well, at First Fridays last week, my best friend, she's vegan, and we tried a new place called the Peaceful Pig. It's vegan barbecue.
And where is this place?
Well, I think they're going to try to start a food truck, but right now I think they're mostly doing events and catering. So I don't think they have a place yet.
What did you try, and tell us about it?
Well, it was the pulled pork sandwich, which of course was not pork, but it's made out of jackfruit. And it was really good. You know, we've gotten some jackfruit at the store that's barbecue jackfruit, and it's kind of squishy. But this actually felt like a pork sandwich.
Hmm. Well, Tina, thanks for that recommendation. That's a new vegan, like possibly soon food truck called the Peaceful Pig. Is that right?
Uh-huh, the Peaceful Pig. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, thanks. And Lisa, you have some jackfruit that you're recommending, along with some other things from food. That's F-U-D.
Yes, Gina, jackfruit makes an amazing barbecue substitute, and we already joked about no fake food, but however, jackfruit itself is a whole food. It's a fruit, a tropical fruit, so it's not like a meat analog, and the jackfruit food uses jackfruit a lot on their menu, and I'm particularly fond of the barbecue jack, which is their barbecue sandwich. It's also really delicious.
And I'm noticing, too, that you can find it at the grocery store now. Forever, you couldn't find. I mean, you had to, like, special order or go to an Asian market or really seek out jackfruit. And, I mean, I saw it at a local hen house just a week ago.
Oh, that's great.
Took a picture and was like, what is it? Jackfruit? Somebody tell me how to make jackfruit other than barbecue sandwiches.
Bethany, anything to say to us about jackfruit?
That it's a fun thing to cook with. But I have seen a couple grocery stores too. It is kind of a funny, I've had people ask me questions, what is this fruit and what do I do with it? And it is, I mean, it takes a little bit of extra preparation, a little TLC to be able to be successful with it. From a nutritional standpoint, it does bring some of those extra nutrients into our diet from the plant-based diet. It's not necessarily one that's going to blow us off the charts as far as being way healthier, but it does give us the benefits that a fruit or veggie would, from the fiber and the just a little bit of starchy vegetable.
And Jenny, you're talking to us about a place I've never heard of before called Enjoy Pure Food and Drink.
Yes, this is in Mission Farms, and this little place is, just watch it, because this gal has big ambitions. She's a local who basically has partnered with Michael Smith, actually, to work on the menu for Enjoy Pure Food and Drink, and she does coffee, and she does cold-pressed juices, vegetable fruit, but she also has an interesting menu, and there's an awful lot of what I'll call these kind of health cafes that have opened up along these lines, and, you know, an awful lot of them, they may be healthy to eat, but they don't taste very good. They're not very interesting, or they're not seasoned right, or they're not spicy or interesting to eat. And every single thing I've gotten at this gal's place has been delicious.
For example.
Yes. So the Gobble Up sandwich is actually very interesting if you're kind of craving a club sandwich. This has turkey, cheddar, coconut bacon, which is basically coconut flakes that they've seasoned and then basically kind of cooked off in the oven until they have, like, they use bacon seasoning on it to give it kind of that bacon flavor. And then they just roast it in the oven until it's toasty and caramelized.
So it gives you that texture and...
The texture and kind of the flavor profile of it, with obviously none of the pork. Tomato, lettuce, and Dijon mustard on it. And then she also has a grain bowl that I'm recommending. Again, this is a quinoa bowl. It's called Take on the World, and it's one of their most popular dishes. I think I talked to her about it a couple of months ago. But it's quinoa, avocado, kale, broccoli, shredded beets, almonds, hemp seed, and it has this ginger miso sauce. And I have to tell
delicious.
You, anything with an Asian dressing,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's my sweet spot right there.
So this is Enjoy Pure Food and Drink in Mission Farms. Let's talk to Preston in Kansas City about another place that it sounds like is in keeping with the same trend. Hi, Preston.
Hey there.
What are you calling to recommend?
Yeah, I was just going to recommend the Unbakery and Juicery, which is on the 63rd Street in Brookside. I think Robin's been doing some fantastic things with juices there and with the alkaline waters, and then they've been expanding their lunch menu. And so recently I've been eating the poke bowls that they have there, and they're fantastic.
What is a poke bowl?
Yeah, so the best that I understand it, it's kind of a smorgasbord of flavors, but really good grain for a base, as well as edamame, some seaweed, and then an essential ingredient for her specific poke bowls would be like a seared tuna or a smoked salmon with a nice Asian dressing to complement it as well.
Well, thanks for that recommendation, Preston. That's Unbakery in the Brookside area.
That place is great.
Yeah, Robin Kraft does great things.
She is. She's a health baller, man. She's on it. So, she's on it.
Anything else to tell us? Like any other recommendations about what they serve there? Or
I really love her kale Caesar salad. It's a mix of kale and romaine lettuce, so you're not like chewing forever like you often are on just a kale salad. And she uses goji berries instead of croutons, and she makes a cashew, I believe, I may be misspeaking, but I believe it's a cashew Parmesan cheese. It's delicious.
Well, one of the things I love is that she has a drive-through. So if you want to eat healthy and you're on the go, right, hit her drive-through, man. Grab a salad, grab a juice, and go. But she also does some classes, I believe. She was doing some kimchi making classes and some other kind of fermentation stuff, which I think is interesting. And so everyone should check her out.
Jenny, you are recommending a few dishes from Krogstrom and Club, and that is not specifically branded as a health restaurant. That's, in fact, a Scandinavian restaurant.
So that's right.
Talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing on that menu that's making you feel nourished or healthy.
So one of the things I'll say about Krogstrom Club is that, you know, it is probably Kansas City's first Scandinavian restaurant, but it's not just pickled herring, although she does have a delicious pickled herring salad on the menu. A lot of people get kind of put off by the idea of Scandinavian food, and Katie has a way of making it very approachable. So it ends up being a very vegetable-based, as well as seafood, fresh seafood-based place to go. And her brunch is phenomenal. The couple of dishes I'm recommending basically are three of her vegetable salads, is what she calls them. Each one of them could stand alone as an entree item. The lavender beets has basically this lavender goat cheese, and it's roasted beets. It's delicious. I'm going to have to cough there. I'm so excited I have to cough. The creamy carrots has this like a horseradish cream sauce, and then it's got these golden raisins, but it's the carrots are done in long strips, so it's really pretty to look at. And then finally is the figgy green bean salad, which is just
figgy.
Mm. So fig-based dressing. And it's got walnuts on it and blue cheese, and it's whole green beans that have just been, I believe blanched. I don't even think she fries them or sears them or does anything to them. It's blanched green beans, and it's just delicious, those flavor combinations. So
let's quickly hear from one last caller. We have time for Matt in Olathe. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. How about you? What can you recommend?
I wanted to highlight Cafe Gratitude. They have one location in LA and then one specially here, and it's another plant-based eatery to continue the trend, I guess. But they have a dish called Sensational, which is like a nostalgic take on Alfredo.
But don't you have to say, I am sensational?
Yes, you do.
No, you don't.
According to them, you do.
Okay, anyway, go on. Tell us about the dish.
So it's an Alfredo, but the sauce is made from Brazil nut Parmesan. So it's, this whole trend of being able to make cheeses from nuts. But then they use spaghetti squash, which for people going paleo or vegan or whatever, it's a great kind of noodle substitute. And then they have mushrooms in there as well. And it's really delightful because it's just kind of nostalgic. It's a dish that it's healthy, but it's something you probably grew up eating.
Well, Lisa also is recommending something at Cafe Gratitude.
Yeah, I love Cafe Gratitude. Completely plant-based, no meat analogs, I believe no soy products, so there's not tofu on the menu. I love their Thai-inspired kelp noodles.
Well, and Bethany, you've been here as our dietitian, but if you're going out for a healthy meal, not preparing one at home, where do you go?
Probably The Mix or Westside Local. They have their shaved Brussels sprouts salad that when I see it, I don't just walk there. I run there. I love it.
And, well, our time is up, but you're going to have to check kcur.org later today for our list of the tastiest healthy foods in town, with healthy in quotes perhaps, but that's where you're going to have to look for the rotisserie chicken that made someone's list. Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine is one of our regular food critics. Thanks so much, Jenny.
Thank you.
And Bethany Fraser, Lisa Murphy, thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks, Gina.
It's time for the weekend, but you can talk to us anytime on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. We had help today from Laura Ziegler. Our intern is Danielle Hogarty. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. And our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs right here in Kansas City. I'm Gina Kaufman, and I hope you have a great weekend, everyone. Up to Date is next. Don't miss it.